You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Thursday, June 14th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site, and this is your daily look at LeBron James, at least for now, and the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. On today's show, I'm joining Trevor Magnotti in a long conversation about the NBA draft. Now, we are going to break down prospects on today's show, one on Friday's show, one all the way through next week in some capacity, whether it's me kind of speculation on what the latest intel is or Trevor and I talking about the picks. The prospects we're talking about today are Trae Young from Oklahoma and Mo Bamba from Texas. They're two guys that could be there at eight, Michael a little bit higher, but I think Young in particular would be of a lot of interest to the Cavs. If you want more NBA draft coverage, the Locked On NBA Network is doing a mock draft on Locked On NBA. You can subscribe to that show on iTunes or wherever else you get podcasts, and my pick is actually today, and we're doing a Reddit AMA at 2 p.m. and r/NBA if you want to check that out as well. We'll be talking about the picks, talking about the draft, but you can check out my pick in that mock draft and the explanation for that pick on today's Locked On NBA show, and listen to yesterday's for the first six picks and all the way through the rest of the draft. As always, you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. You can find Trevor, by the way, at Illegal Screens. You can read his writing at Fear the Sword, Clips Nation, and The Step Back. We'll also be continuing our play review series over the next week, so if you've enjoyed that so far and enjoyed the breakdowns I've done, we're going to continue to do those as well. But here's today's show talking about Trae Young and Mo Bamba. Back tomorrow with another show. Thanks for listening, and this is your episode of Locked On Cavs for Thursday, June 14th. Trevor, let's start with Trae Young from Oklahoma. He is someone that, in my little knowledge of college basketball, I have some concerns about him as a defensive player. Your profile of him that you wrote for the Sword really actually sold me more on what he could be than I think a lot of what we've seen from some other guys, just because the star potential is there. And he also is this guy that has been linked to LeBron. You know, it's not quite Shabazz Napier 2.0 with him, but there is this sort of thing where they've talked about each other with LeBron throwing a lot of praise his way. When you look at him as a prospect, what are things that stand out to him that if he is there at number eight, which in the context of the lottery is a sort of a weird pick to be at, and this draft it's sort of a weird pick to be at. What stands out to you as strengths of his that if he's there at eight, there's going to be really good reasons for the Cavs to take him?
Well, I think just flat out, he's the best offensive player on the board outside of Luka Doncic. I think that he's got a variety of different skills and talents that are going to make him probably the safest bet to at least be a high-level primary initiator in the NBA. His three biggest skills are all obviously offensive. We all know about his pull-up shooting. He can pull up from 30 feet, coming off of screens, going left or right, coming up on fast break, doesn't really matter. He's able to knock down that shot consistently, and that was the big reason that he's a household name and was potentially the best player in college basketball this year. He is a dynamic pull-up shooter, and I think that that's probably his single best skill. His most important skill to me is his passing versatility. He's able to make a lot of different passes and different degrees of passes, and is probably the best playmaker in this class outside of Doncic, and most years would be far and away the best playmaker in a draft class. He's on par with Lonzo Ball for me because he's able to make left and right-handed skip passes, both things that are very difficult for college level point guards to be able to make. He was able to do with either hand. He's able to make the little drop off and pocket passes in the pick and roll. He's a good lob thrower. He's a very good decision maker on the fast break. I really like the variety of different ways that you can use his passing within an offense. And then third thing that we didn't really get to see that much this year because he was far and away the best offensive weapon that Oklahoma had is he's not only just a good up shooter. He's also a dynamic catch and shoot threat. He's a really good shooter off the catch, has really good form, squares to the basket really well, good coming off screens, good shooting on the move. I think that that is going to allow him to either play as a lead guard or secondary playmaker off of a guy, say, like LeBron James. He is a player that I think can be used on and off ball on offense, and I think that you can use him in a variety of different ways, and that versatility is what makes him, I think, one of the highest ceiling offensive players in this draft. And I think that that's valuable for the Cavs, obviously, if LeBron leaves, because that means you've got a potential budding starter to replace him. But even if he is growing up in the NBA with LeBron, he's still going to be a very good offensive player. And I think that he's going to learn to be able to play off of him at a high level.
So you think about that Oklahoma team. The one thing I really know about that Oklahoma team, and I think this is a casual understanding of that Oklahoma team, is this is a guy who was doing just a lot of everything for that team, that he was the lone good offensive player on that team. He was asked to do a lot. When you're evaluating a guy that is in that situation, that is you're checking off these boxes of things he does well, and you know, obviously there's some weighty comparison thrown his way this season. But is there any trouble in evaluating how some things would differ in the NBA? So let's say he is on a team next year where he's maybe the backup point guard to George Hill on a team where LeBron comes back. To me, in that situation, his ability to be a off-ball shooter and his passing ability would be a lot more valuable than, say, you know, his ability to pull it from anywhere, and that would certainly be valuable. This Cavs team, I think, does need some more ball creation, but some of the other stuff would just be as valuable. He's just not going to get that type of those type of looks and that type of freedom in that situation. It's different, of course, if, you know, he is the pick and the only other, it's like him and JR and J.D. Osman and Rodney Hood on the wing next season. When you are evaluating a prospect in this sort of context, is it hard to project, in your mind at least, to project some of the things that would be different depending on what type of situation he ends up in?
Well, I think the biggest thing that's difficult to project is the shooting percentage-wise. We all like to gravitate towards the percentages, and we all kind of have a basic understanding of, you know, the more shots you take, the less efficient you're going to be. But it also depends on the quality of shots that you're taking, and especially the second half of the season when everybody knew that Trae Young was coming and the Big 12 had some very good defenses in it, you're able to load up and stop that guy when there's no other outlets. And I want to see what he looks like with the benefit of an NBA spacing as a shooter. I think that that is going to be a very important contextual tool for us, is allowing him to, you know, have that 3-4 feet of space, bringing the ball up the floor, coming out of a pick and roll where teams have to sink back a little bit and they can't just press up and high trap him, because he's going to be able to make use of his passing and he's going to be more reliable in that regard. Obviously, the catch and shoot stuff is going to be important as well. Very difficult to get a gauge of that, even though his form looks very well and we have seen him in the high school level play in that role. He did play with Michael Porter Jr. in AAU ball and did a little bit of that stuff, so we do have some idea of how that catch and shoot stuff is going to translate, even though we didn't see it at Oklahoma. The biggest area where this becomes a problem, though, is kind of what we're shifting into talking about weaknesses, is it's very difficult to actually understand what he is as a defensive player because of the load that he was forced to carry for the Sooners. It is unreasonable to expect an 18-year-old 6'2" rail thin point guard to be able to consistently create for an offense at a high level and then also turn around and play reasonable defense. Yeah, he took plays off, and yes, he didn't give 100% intensity at the time. There's definitely reasons to be scared of his defense, but the load that he was taking on offense, it really clouds our understanding of just how good or just how bad he actually is going to be in the NBA.
He fascinates me in that regard, just thinking about how he would translate. To look at the other end of the floor, what stands out to you as weaknesses for him? Maybe at number eight, this is less of a concern because you are going to have less room to be picky at number eight than you would at, say, number three, number four in the draft. It's why that point of the draft, I would argue, why that matters so much. But when you look at him in terms of what weaknesses he has, what stands out to you for him as a prospect?
The strength is the obvious thing that's going to limit him. He does not have a very well-developed frame, and does not have very wide shoulders. It doesn't seem like he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to put on a lot of muscle mass in the way that Kyrie Irving did throughout his development with the Cavs. I think that that's going to be his biggest impediment to being a passable defender at the NBA level is he's not going to be able to switch. You're going to have to really scheme around him against taller, more athletic point guards because he's not going to be able to contain those guys. He's going to be somebody that if you are in a switching defense, he is not going to be able to perform well, even to a degree of what we would expect a switching defense to do for a point guard that's not very good at defense. He's gonna be hunted at the NBA level, and that's just something you're gonna have to accept. I think that the engagement really isn't that big of a problem. I think that he's gonna be able to get engaged, and if that's the role that he's needing to play, if he's taking 20 shots a game in the NBA level, yeah, he's probably not going to be very good. But I think if he's playing in a secondary role, he can be at least a little bit more useful in that regard. And, you know, these are big weaknesses that he's probably never going to be able to overcome just because of his size and because of his frame, but and because of the offensive load he's going to take. But at the end of the day, to me, as we kind of transition and talking a little bit about projection, to me, the defense stuff doesn't really matter at all. We have seen time and again that you can build a functional offense. You can build a winning basketball team around a point guard who does not play strong defense or even sometimes passable defense at the NBA level. After all, who was the starting point guard on the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers?
The king of dying on screens himself, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, if you're nervous that the 6'2 college point guard isn't going to be able to hang fighting over screens and getting posted up by NBA big men, I think there's, when you look at his offensive game and you look at how polished he is for someone who's as young as he is, I just don't see how it's a problem. Point guard defense is not that important. And I think that when you're in talking about him in the context of what he's going to be asked to do on this team, either as the young star of a rebuilding team or as a secondary piece who's primarily there for his creation ability, I find it very difficult to care about his defensive capabilities. You can punt that completely, and I think that the Cavs are still going to be fine either way because of what he brings on offense.
So at number eight, I tend to agree with you. This was, and to this circles back to kind of what I said before, but if this was number three or something like that, or number four, I would probably say that it would matter more my selection. But if you get to eight, and guys, you know, the consensus top three seems to be Jackson, Doncic, and DeAndre Ayton, with Ayton probably going number one. You get past that. If, you know, Bamba's gone, if a team takes a shot on Porter, if, you know, Mikal Bridges is beyond this, but Wendell Carter's gone, Bagley's gone. If none of those guys falls and Young's the guy that slips because of these concerns, I think it's less of an issue today. And point guard is a need, in my opinion, for the Cavs. You look at what this roster is, regardless of if LeBron comes back or not. George Hill is basically on a one-year contract because of the last year guarantee. And if LeBron leaves, I think there's a lot of incentive to trade him and get something back for him and overhaul the roster to some degree. Jordan Clarkson's just not a point guard. They never trusted him to be one this season. His career numbers and style of play have never indicated that he is a real actual NBA point guard. He's just a gunner. Jose Calderon's Jose Calderon. He's a legend, but he's old and isn't just he's very, very limited at this point. Long term, short term, Young would fill a need, and I think there's certainly some potential there. You look at the fit on the Cavs. Let's go with LeBron first. What do you would this, if he's there at eight, and let's say, you know, certainly they're not going to have their exact pick of guys they would like at number eight if Young is there. Someone they like will be off the board at that point. But what is his outcome as a rookie in the maybe the next 3-4 years of LeBron's career look like for him if things go well, or if he at least moderately looks like a good NBA player in that context?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult to kind of assess what his rookie year is going to look like just because a rookie year playing with LeBron as a top 10 pick is something that we really haven't seen before. So it's very difficult to project how they handle his minutes, role.
Yeah, and as a note on that, Rodney Hood, let's say there's someone coming in as a high usage player. Rodney Hood had like a career high usage with the Jazz this season. it got cut to a career low in the games he played with the Cavs in the regular season. So Trae Young like would have that reality facing him. And if Kevin Love's around, that's just another guy that would take away the ball.
Yeah, and I think that to a degree is going to be something that the Cavs are going to want to focus on. They're going to want to flesh out his secondary playmaking role. They're going to want to get him in, or one that's going to help him kind of mature into a player who 2-3 years down the line is useful playing next to LeBron. And it's also going to help mask some of those deficiencies that we see, you know, his inability to finish at the rim because of the lack of strength. One example, well, if he's running a secondary pick and roll after the defense has already been caved in by LeBron steamrolling to the rim and kicking out, that's an advantage situation for him. That's going to be a much better situation than him trying to go 1-on-5. It just is. So I think that that's going to be something that they would focus on, would be kind of getting him in that secondary playmaker role, getting him in advantage situations after the defense has collapsed, having him command second units, and just kind of letting him make mistakes and mature throughout the regular season and hoping that he's kind of on an accelerated growth curve headed to the playoffs. I don't think it's at all out of question to kind of expect as a ceiling outcome that he looks like Damian Lillard in 2012-2013 on the Blazers, coming into a veteran team, playing off of LaMarcus Aldridge and kind of establishing his footing quickly. He's a very competent guy. He has a very hard work ethic, and he's a guy who will play with a chip on his shoulder. You know, he wasn't very highly recruited coming out of high school. He is a guy that if he ends up on the Cavs, he will have been passed by 7 other players that he thinks he's better than. And I think that you're going to see a situation where he's going to work a lot harder if he gets picked at 8 than maybe potentially he would if he was picked at number 2. So I think that that's a thing to consider here as well. I think that he's probably going to come in, and I expect a decent amount of value coming from him playing in that secondary playmaker role. And then he's kind of, you know, they kind of do the dance that LeBron and Kyrie did. You kind of feed him more as games go on, and you just kind of see what the Cavs need from him in the future.
You look at a team without LeBron, and they move on to a rebuild, which I think is the likely scenario, or maybe they even play for the middle ground in the East. What does he look like in that scenario where it's him and, you know, there's maybe one or two veterans around, but the team core goes from what it is now to, let's say, some version of Young, Zizic, Osman, and Larry Nance? What does that look like for him?
30 shots a game. I mean, that's
like
kind of the
lot of mistakes, I would imagine, in that scenario as well.
Yeah, I mean, in that scenario, you're kind of giving him like the rookie Kyrie Irving, rookie Tyreek Evans, like just roll the ball out for him and let's see what we got, and kind of let him flesh out from there. You're kind of relying on his playmaking coming out and, you know, letting the role players that all can shoot, all of the young guys at least have, other than the centers, at least have some capability to shoot. You just kind of let him come out and hope that, you know, his passing comes through a little bit better than you would probably want to expect, and you let him work on generating that pull up shot, getting stronger and making mistakes. So, you know, maybe he's not, or maybe he plays a little stronger game to game playing with LeBron, but maybe his numbers look better and maybe he gets more confidence playing on that lottery team. It's always a really difficult thing to project how a guy's going to do coming in to a title contender. It's very difficult to come in as a rookie and have that effect on a team. I mean, that's why the Rookie of the Year race this year was so fascinating, was you had three guys in Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, and Jason Tatum, who all came in to veteran squads and all came in and had an immediate impact on the way that their team played and had a consistent impact on how their team played. That's just not normal. So I have a difficult time projecting how that's going to go. I'm pretty confident, though, that if this is a lottery team, Young's going to be taking a lot of shots. He's going to be doing a lot of playmaking, and it might look a little rough game to game, but he's going to put up numbers in that regard, and he's at least going to get to flesh out a little bit more of that primary creator equity than he would playing next to LeBron.
Is the starting point of, well, if Trae Young is the first pick, and we're going to move on to Bobamba after this, but is Trae Young as the first pick in a scenario where it's a new era to some degree for the Cavs. Is he what is he as a starting point? I mean, if he works out, like, what is having him as the starting point of a rebuild? What does that mean with, like, Osman and Zizic, who are fine, and Nant, who's fine and a tad bit older?
I think that he's, like I said at the beginning, he's your best chance at a star in this draft outside of Doncic. So I think that he is, I think very highly of him as a offensive creator. And I think that if you draft him and you are going in and rebuilding, you are treating him like he is going to be your number one guy. You obviously will keep your options open, because in that scenario, you're probably picking close to the top in 2019. You're probably picking close to the top in 2020. So I think that, you know, you keep your options open. He doesn't have to be the number one guy just because he's the first of whatever young core you're going to assemble. But he is at that level of player in a way that several of the other players that we're going to talk about here over the next few days are just not going to be able to be. He's the one guy of the realistic options for the Cavs that I feel comfortable rolling the ball out for and saying, we're going to build with your strengths and weaknesses in mind as you are thinking of you as our best or second best player.
Yeah, I think it makes him a very interesting option, number 8. And the more and more I've learned about him, I think I become more interested in him. But we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back to talk about one Mo Bamba. And we're back with Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword, Clips Nation, and The Step Back. And we're going to move on to Mo Bamba, the Texas center with a freakish wingspan, who, if everything about him sort of works out, he could be this rim-running, three-point shooting, rim-protecting monster. There's some questions about exactly what he's going to be like. But Trevor, let's do this the opposite this time. Let's go with his weaknesses first. If Bamba's at 8, what are the concerns? Even if at 8 he might be a great value at number 8, and like the potential for him at number 8 could be really interesting, what about him at 8 would be a concern for you?
Well, I think the biggest concern for me is his actual functional athleticism. He is a guy who is an athletic freak, 7 foot tall, 7'10" wingspan, which we've rarely ever seen before in the NBA. And, you know, he's had the numbers come out. He had that really good three-quarter court sprint recorded that was faster than several top-flight NBA point guards. But his lateral agility, his ability to sink down and actually defend in space, I'm a little bit concerned about. He doesn't move very well side to side. He doesn't flip his hips very well when changing directions. He has a difficult time recovering against somebody who's going to be a more crafty dribbler going to the rim. Little worried about that. Also a little bit worried about his motor. And I talked about this a little bit in the piece. He's a guy that in some aspects does have a very high motor on the floor. He's a good rebounder. He is a good rim runner. He will do the little things on offense. He's a good screen setter, which we'll talk about more in a little bit. But you know, he rarely boxes out on defense, especially. He doesn't secure his man. He relies too much on his length to be able to get positioning and get rebounds. And he also has some difficulties finishing plays on defense. You know, he'll be in position, he'll make a really nice first contest at the rim, but if the other team gets the ball, he will struggle to make the second play, the third play, all of those decisions that come when the defense has collapsed after he's already been taken out of position. He's not a guy that's going to jump back in and make another play in a way that, you know, a Draymond Green would. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. And then also his finishing, he has decent touch because of his length, but he doesn't have creative touch, meaning that I worry about him as a potential post player. I worry about him going up in traffic because he doesn't seem to have a lot of crafty moves around the rim. He relies too much on his length and his extension, and a lot of times that ends up making his shots go a little bit flat. So I'm a little bit worried about all of those things, and I think that that's going to put a cap on his effectiveness in the traditional roles that we expect him to be in, because if he doesn't have good lateral agility, he can't defend in space, he struggles to finish plays, and he's not a great finisher, then him being a rim runner on offense and a rim protector on defense is really questionable then, because all of those things are very closely tied to being successfully. Yeah, length is part of it, and yeah, being a good screen setter is part of being a good pick and roll player, but you need to have those extra things to really put you over the top in the NBA, and I just don't see all those things fleshed out consistently for him.
Yeah, I think the finishing to me is in the motor as well, because you look at someone like Clint Capela, who basically just like has a really good motor, runs the floor really well, finishes at a very high rate. Like, that's what makes him successful, and like he's obviously got a freak athletic profile as well, but like, he's not great because he's a freak athlete. It's because he does all of these other things you're mentioning, just the ability to finish, the ability to add these other things to his game. The flip side of this, obviously, that there is a lot to like about Bamba. You've mentioned his length and just how freakishly long he is. He's by far the longest player in this draft. He could be this elite rim protector. And there's, even if the Cavs have some good bigs and some interesting bigs on the roster that are not old yet, like, what he could be is a unicorn compared to what they have. And he's maybe not unicorn in the way we've talked about Cat and Embiid and whatnot, but like, there's a lot of potential there. He could be a great rebounder as far as we can tell so far, and he could be a really, really good screen setter. And like, there's a framework there if he could protect the rim, set screens, and roll, of just like that being a very useful NBA player. In a world where bigs are changing and we ask different things of them in basketball, like, the framework to me, when I look at the strengths you've listed out, when we made a little mock-up of this, what his strengths are seem to me to indicate that, like, if he just maybe hits those, there's something really interesting there. And if he, and the key, and maybe there's more bust potential than I'm stating here, but if he hits like some of the baseline level stuff we expect him to be good at, that should make him at least kind of useful in the NBA.
Yeah, I think he's got a very solid baseline as a rotation player. It's whether or not he puts all that talent to the level of being the players that he's most commonly compared to, a Rudy Gobert, for example. He has a long way to go to being that level of player. Part of that is building more strength. He only weighs 225 pounds. That's not going to cut it as an NBA rim protector. Another part of that is the fact that he just does not seem to understand the game at the level that Gobert does. And he does not hustle and finish plays to that level. And that's huge for his next step of development. Now, where he can kind of diverge from that, and this is something that I talked about in the piece a little bit as well, is he does have a pretty projectable shot, and he does have decent court vision and a decent handle. There is some shot creation upside here, and there is some development potential that he could grow into the type of player that we see Joel Embiid being for the Sixers, where he is a rim protecting five that can shoot threes and can create offense for himself and others. And that is one of the most valuable players in the NBA, because how do you defend that, especially if that guy has a 7'10 wingspan? He's got a long, long way to go there. And I kind of worry sometimes, especially with all the draft videos that we see come out where it's only him shooting uncontested three-pointers in a gym by himself, I kind of wonder if he is kind of foregoing some of the basic things that could make him really successful for this chasing of being this potentially unicorn big that can step outside and space the floor. And that's kind of another concern here, is I don't know that Bamba knows what his strengths are, and how he's going to be most effective on a court. And that's going to take a lot of coaching to kind of get him in the right position for that.
Let's look at him with LeBron first. I think the intriguing part of adding a guy like him would give them something this team just doesn't have. I don't know how much it raises the ceiling of the team if he comes in and plays, and maybe he becomes something a team would want in a trade. And I think that's a factor with Trae Young or any of these guys that we're going to talk about in this draft series as well. But him with LeBron would be interesting just because, again, he's something different than Thompson. He's something different than Nance. At the same time, I'm probably overthinking this to some degree with him, with guys like Carter, Wendell Carter as well, and you know, at number eight, you can, it's harder to be picky again, but I wonder if there's just like a, if LeBron comes back, if a big is the right call, just based on what the team is sort of going to be going up against, if they want to try to compete for a title next season. That is what my gut tells me in this current NBA. I just wonder if a big that needs some work, when you have Nance and Thompson and Zizic, I think is going to be a real player, and LeBron has to play some four and Love has to play some five, if a guy like Bamba to some degree makes full sense in that context.
Well, I'm kind of the opinion that if you get to take a guy like Mo Bamba or Wendell Carter draft, then you should not care at all about what Larry Nance can do and what Ante Zizic could potentially do, because all of these guys probably have a higher ceiling than either of those two guys put together. So I kind of throw that out. You find something to do with those guys and you try to rework your roster by trying to get by trying to unload them, and you build around this potential really good core piece. The top nine of this draft is at another level compared to everyone else in this draft and compared to what your typical young player is going to look like. And I'm not going to pass on the chance to take a guy like Bamba or Carter if it means that I have to potentially pay Larry Nance so much money when I don't know for a fact that Larry Nance is good, which we don't. We got hurt early on in the tenure and never really came back to form. We don't know if Larry Nance is the type of guy that you want to build around long term. But I think that going back to talking about Bamba with LeBron, I do have some reservations in that regard. I do think that, for one, this Cavs defensive culture is probably not where you want to put a guy that you're concerned about his motor. That kind of worries me a little bit, and that kind of worries me about him potentially hitting a ceiling. Is he going to try and commit to getting better in the ways that he needs to get better to actually be able to make an impact and cut into the need to fix this defense? And I just don't know if that's going to work. I do think that he would be a very monstrous pick and roll partner with LeBron, obviously, because you throw a player that's as gravitational as him or as LeBron running towards the rim, and you give him a 7'10" catch radius to outlet, and that's pretty scary. So I think that that's something that's gonna work out really well in their favor. I think that he's at least gonna be a passable to good rim protector at his baseline. So I think that that does hold some value for the Cavs, and you just kind of hope that he figures it out and that he doesn't get ruined by the general culture of apathy that has grown in this Cavs locker room.
Yeah, that would be a weird thing. And, you know, people have tweeted at me saying I'm overstating the importance of it, but like the Cavs do have to find someone to replace what Vitaly Potapenko did for Ante Zizic this year. Potapenko was huge in developing Zizic's game, just the strides he made. And I think like having that type of guy in there would really benefit a guy like Bamba. And if you don't have that coach there to work with him a lot one-on-one, and yes, he'd get good reps with Tristan, Nance, and maybe Zizic in the limited amount of practice that the team would have. But I think having that coach that'll really work with him could be good. If there's no LeBron and he's there at eight, there's a lot of upside, obviously. Is that upside for you, just even if it's a weirder, not as obvious star replacement for LeBron, and it's not as like Trae Young will score a lot, Bamba's just not going to be that guy. What does he look like as the first pick in the even if it comes before LeBron leaves? But
well, I think like, what does he look like in a scenario like where the Cavs are a little rebuilding? Bit better for Bamba specifically, because it allows him to kind of flesh out and explore some of that creation upside while also working on the rim protection. Any NBA team that drafts Bamba is going to put that as an emphasis. That's what they are going to want him to do. They are going to want him to become this elite level rim protector that we all think he can be. And I think that that's going to be something where you're a little bit more forgiving of the mistakes in year one, two, three with a young big man if you're a rebuilding team on defense especially. And it's going to allow him to kind of flesh out some of that shot creation upside. So I actually kind of like that fit a little bit better for him, and I like him a little bit better if we are pretty sure that LeBron's leaving, because he can be that centerpiece of the defense that also can grow into this valuable offensive role player or offensive secondary piece. So I actually kind of like that fit a little bit better, because the Cavs can then kind of let him make his mistakes, let him focus on the things that he wants to get better at, and kind of let him grow his own role in a way that, again, a team with LeBron just not going to be able to happen for a rookie.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Again, find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens and read his writing at Fear the Sword, Eclipse Nation, and The Step Back. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. You can find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Please send your mailbag questions to lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Again, back tomorrow with another episode. This has been Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavs, and this has been your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers on Locked On Cavaliers. Cheers, y'all.